Today on Hardwired.
Peter's attempt to return to his past had come up absolutely empty. You know why, folks? Because the Red Sea has been closed behind us. We can't go back. And if you try to go back to that old life, you will find that you catch nothing. You won't catch joy. You won't catch peace. You won't catch fulfillment. You won't catch anything if you go back to that old life.
Welcome to Hardwired with Pastor Jeff Wickliar, founder and senior pastor of Turning Point Church in Fort Worth, Texas. If you're looking for some words of hope, encouragement, solid biblical truth, and maybe even a laugh or two, well, that's exactly what Pastor Jeff wants to share with you today. We know life can get pretty busy and complicated at times, so we're truly grateful you've chosen to take a break and listen to the program. Now, if you're not able to hang out with us for the entire program, you can always check it out at our website, hardwired.org. In fact, you can find all the programs right there waiting just for you, hardwired.org. But right now, here's Pastor Jeff to tell us more about today's program on Hardwired.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this edition of Hardwired. Thank you so much for joining us. Well, we're in our Bible Blockbuster series, and we've been through several of the standout messages and stories from the Bible. And today we're going to deal with what I'm calling Jesus Fish Fry on the Shore. And it's the time that most of you that know the Bible remember when Jesus stood on the seashore, called the disciples to an early morning fish fry, and he focused on Peter, and he restored Peter's calling and got him back in the saddle, so to speak. It was a very, very powerful moment. Three times, Peter, do you love me? Three times, Lord, I do love you. And we're going to talk about how that really plays out in the original language. So I want you to grab a Bible and tune in and let's take some notes and let's learn about the chef, Jesus, the fish fry on the shore, and see what it means to be truly restored.
Now we see that when the disciples arrived on shore, Jesus was holding a fish fry. He invited them over and they sat together. And I imagine that fish was incredible because the one that had created fish cooked the fish, and that was Jesus. Now, as I said, he had far more cooking than just the fish. He was there for a reason. He was there to restore Simon Peter, who had vehemently, strongly denied the Lord three times. And on the third time, he denied him with cursing. The Greek language is very strong here. Jesus walked out on the third denial and looked Simon Peter in the eye as he was denying having known him. When it says he was claiming not to have known him, he was literally claiming to have never even met him. He was utterly removing himself from any connection to Jesus Christ. It was a total denunciation, totally denied him. They whisk Jesus by as he's been arrested. They're taking him to another place. And right then he looked at Peter. Can you imagine that look? He looked at Peter when he said, blankety, blankety, blank, I don't know him, never have known him. It must have burned a hole into that old fisherman's soul. You know that it did. The Bible says afterward, Peter went out and wept bitterly. It was a bitter denial, a bitter failure. He really fell. No question about it. He went through intense condemnation. Yeah, look at you, big man, telling Jesus that he's the Christ, the Son of the living God. You think you're hot stuff, and look what you just did. You denied even having an acquaintance with him, and you did it in front of a little girl at a campfire, warming yourself by the fire of the world. You denied him. What a guy. What a courageous man you are. I can just hear the condemnation. Peter had been convinced that he would never deny the Lord. He was very confident in himself that it would never happen. The Bible records that prior to his arrest, Jesus had told his disciples, "This very night, all of you are going to fall away on account of me, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered." And Peter, always putting his foot in his mouth, piped up and said, "Not me. Even if all fall away on account of you, I never will." So he looked at all of his compadres, 11 of them, and said, "They may do it, but I won't. I'll never fall away from you. I'll never deny you because I'm Simon Peter. I'm the one that walked on the water. I'm the one that got out of the boat while all these other sissies stayed in it. I'm the man. It's not going to be me. But Jesus knew him better than he knew himself, and he knows us better than we know ourselves. And Jesus said, truly I say to you, Peter, this very night, it's only going to be a few hours, son, before the rooster crows. You will disown me 3 times. Well, Peter jumped in again and said, even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you. Even if I have to go to prison. And he made it worse. He kept digging his own grave. But in a few hours he did. I don't know him. I don't know him. Blankety blank. I don't know him. And in our text, we find him having essentially returned to his old job, because that's what condemned people do. When you feel really condemned and like you've really blown it and really failed, you have a tendency to say, well, I'm done with Christianity. I'm done with this walk. I'm just going to go back to my old life. I'm going to go to what I've known. So for Peter, it was fishing. So he said, I'm just going to go back to fishing and go back to what I've always known. That's what I'm going to do. So he went back. And it's worth noting, I think, that as is often the case with you and me, Peter's attempt to return to his past had come up absolutely empty. You know why, folks? Because the Red Sea has been closed behind us. We can't go back. And if you try to go back to that old life, you will find that you catch nothing. You won't catch joy. You won't catch peace. You won't catch fulfillment. You won't catch anything if you go back to that old life. I think God put his hand down and did not let them catch even a minnow that night. Because if they had succeeded, they would have said, oh, look how our old life is blessed. But no, the old life brought back absolutely nothing. It was empty. And I think that's why Jesus came to the shore and stabbed them a little bit and said, children, do you have any meat? In other words, tell me what you've caught going back. Well, we don't have a thing. Now, as they returned to the shore, the familiar voice of Jesus was heard in the quiet morning hour. It just touches me. Now, I think Peter may have forgotten that Jesus had already told him, Simon, Satan wants to sift you like wheat. That's a strong word. It's when you take grain with a pitchfork and you hurl it up into the air violently so that the wind hits that grain and blows the chaff off. And then it comes tumbling back to the ground. So sifting is when that wheat is violently tossed. And so Jesus was saying, Simon, the devil has asked to violently toss you, to really run a number on you. But I have prayed for you that your faith will not fail. And when you have turned back, not if you turn back, but when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. See, what we don't realize a lot of the time is Jesus is praying for you and me. We have an intercessor in heaven who ever lives to make intercession for us. And when we fail, he is praying that our faith will not fail, but we will return. And when we do, we come back as strengtheners and helpers and healers. But now here's Jesus on the shore, the great psychologist, and he's calling his man to him. And we find that the Lord had already begun the steps leading to Peter's restoration even before this. This is what really got me as I read this story again. Because on the first Sunday morning, the first Easter, when Jesus rose from the dead, it says some of the women had gone to the tomb and they found it empty, and an angel was seated there, and the angel said this to them, go and tell the disciples and Peter to meet me in Galilee. Now, Peter had said, I don't know him, don't know him, don't know him. But now here is Jesus. He's freshly resurrected. He has defeated death, defeated hell, defeated the grave. He is Lord of lords, King of kings, master of the universe. And look what's on his mind. He makes a point of saying, be sure when you tell the disciples to meet me in Galilee that you also tell Peter, the one who denied me. And he named him. Peter's was the only name Jesus singled out and mentioned because Peter was the chief of the deniers. And the Lord wanted him to know, Peter, I'm not done with you. Don't you know that when they came to him and said, hey, we saw an angel, and Peter, he mentioned your name. He said, tell the disciples to meet me in Galilee and be sure you tell Peter. Let him know that his failure isn't final. Let him know that his failure hasn't taken him out. I think Peter must have said, are you sure he mentioned me? You sure it wasn't James or John or one of the others? Because I really, really blew it. After what I did to him, did he really call me by name? Does the Lord still want me? Now we read that after breakfast, Jesus looked across the fire. Here's a powerful moment. He looked right at Simon Peter. I think when Peter jumped into that lake to go see him, don't you know the emotions that were running through his mind? When they said, it's the Lord, it's the resurrected Lord. Only the Lord tells us to throw the net on the right side and we bring in this great harvest of fish. That's what the Lord did with us before. That's the mark of the Lord. He gives you a harvest. He blesses you exceeding abundantly above. It's the Lord. Don't you know when he dived in? It was swimming to him. His emotions were running wild. What's he going to say to me? I haven't looked him in the eye since that moment. How am I going to face him? How are we going to do this? How are we going to handle it? Is he going to rebuke me? Is he going to love me? What's he going to do? But I've got to see him because I love him. So he gets there, and I'm sure it's very, very quiet. It says they dared not ask him who he was. They knew it was the Lord. So they're eating fish, and you can hear the fire crackling and popping. And Jesus finally looks straight at Peter. All the other disciples fade into the background. And he looks at Peter and says, let me ask you a question. He said, Simon, son of John, do you really love me more than these? And he moved his hand across, pointing to the other disciples, a little stick, because Peter had said, though all of these deny you, I won't. So he says, hey, let me ask you a question. Do you love me more than these, like you said? Stick. He said, well, Lord, you know that I love you. And Jesus said, then feed my lambs. And three times he asked him, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? And three times Simon Peter says, you know that I love you. Yes, I love you. It says when he asked him the third time, it grieved Peter. And he said, Lord, you know that I love you. I think Jesus did that on purpose. Three affirmations for three denials. I don't know him. Do you love me? I don't know him. Do you love me? I don't know him, blankety blank. Do you love me, Peter? And he was restoring him, restoring his relationship, restoring him to the Father. Now, through this story, we can see a beautiful picture of forgiveness and restoration because, folks, this is where we live. We live in a world where relationships get broken. We live in a world where we offend God sometimes, sin against God sometimes, and we can do one of two things with it. We can let it drive us back to our old life, or we can get restored and go on. Life is all about forgiveness and restoration because human beings are the ones on the planet. And we break relationship. We fail each other. We offend each other. And a wedge gets put in between us if we're not careful. So we look at how Jesus restored his relationship with Peter, and it's beautiful. It gives a great picture. So let me share with you how he did it. First, we learn from Jesus to deal with offenses very quickly.
We'll get back to Pastor Jeff in a moment to close out today's program. But first, I want to share something about our program. Our mission is actually very simple, to share the life-changing good news of Jesus Christ in a way that gets hardwired into your life. And we trust these messages from Pastor Jeff aren't something you can only listen to and enjoy, but that they inspire you to share with others. The message of the gospel is something everyone needs to hear, and that's why it's a priority to us. And you get to join us in this important mission. Call us at 877-884-3111 to say you're in. Or drop us a line at our website, hardwired.org. Well, here's Pastor Jeff with the rest of today's program.
Don't let resentment grow roots. Somebody offends you. See, Peter looked and said, I don't know him. How do you think that made Jesus feel? I've never even known him. Cursing, I don't know him. How do you think that made him feel? That hurt, but he knew he was going to do it. But you see, something happens. Somebody says something, does something, and we get hurt, and we get angry, and we get offended. And the word offense means that you're walking along and you trip. Something makes you trip. It's not just somebody makes you angry or somebody hurts your feelings, but offense can also mean somebody does something that makes you fall into sin. Somebody tempts you. Somebody entices you. Offense is a very wide word. It's not just being angry or hurt, but it's you're walking along and somebody does something that entices you or tempts you into sin and you stumble and you trip and you fall and your relationship with God is hurt. Or somebody makes you angry where you don't respond to it in the spirit. And it makes you sin in your anger. Your anger becomes bitterness and it grows. And so you have become offended. You have tripped. You have fallen. And now you are separated from God in that there is a wedge between you and the Lord because you're angry or you're in some other kind of sin because you have become offended. That's why Jesus said, "Woe to the one who offends one of these little ones. It's better for them that a millstone were tied around their neck and they were thrown into the midst of the sea than they offend or make one of these little ones to stumble." And that's why I so fear for the school system that's in America now, because of what they're teaching children, causing them to stumble into sin. Through offenses, listen, I have pastored for a long time, and I'm going to tell you, I am convinced, totally convinced today, that Satan's number one weapon against the church is offenses. The enemy puts an offense in between brothers and sisters, dads and moms, parents and children. There are offenses. He uses an offense. You get mad at someone. You get disillusioned with someone. You get angry at somebody, and you don't fix it, and it causes a wedge to come between you and them. And through offenses, the enemy divides and conquers us because we don't understand that you can't give an offense very long before it puts down roots. Hebrews 12:15 says, "See to it that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many." See, as goes the root, so goes the fruit. Whatever the root is what the fruit is going to be. So it says you get offended, you get hurt, you get angry. Somebody does something and you trip and you fall into that anger and into that grudge and into that unforgiveness. And scripture says that if you don't deal with it quickly, it puts down a root. And once that root goes down, then it puts up a fruit. And the fruit is it springs up and defiles many because mark it down, when somebody has been offended, they never keep it to themselves. They always talk about it. If you want to know if somebody has forgiven another person, just go somewhere with them for about 10 minutes. And if they haven't, it's coming out. It's going to come out. And what they want you to join with them in the offense to take their side. And before you know it, you got a church full of people and you got a whole section of people that have taken somebody's offense. And this section is mad at this section. And it all goes back to one offense where somebody didn't deal with it and the root went down and the fruit came up and people have taken the offense and taken the hurt and taken their cause. And the enemy comes in and divides and he conquers. The longer you nurse a grudge, you're going to rehearse the grudge. And the longer you rehearse the grudge, you're going to disperse the grudge. You nurse it, you rehearse it, and then you start to disperse it. And out it goes. And the devil is happy and God is grieved. But listen, there's one way to stop an offense like that, and it is deal with it quickly. "Let not the sun go down on your wrath," Paul wrote, because you give the devil an opportunity. You give him a place. So deal with it and deal with it quickly. Can you say it with me? Quickly. You say, "Well, how quickly?" As quickly as it takes. As quickly as you can work it up, do it. You would think that having just been raised from the dead, that Jesus would have had other things on his mind than Simon Peter when he was resurrected. But notice how quickly he said to the angel, "You go tell them I'm going to meet him in Galilee, and you be sure you tell Peter because there needs to be a healing. So though I've got the universe at my feet, I am concerned about one offense with Peter, and I want to fix it." It's a testament to just how seriously the Lord takes forgiveness and restoration in that he immediately focused on repairing his relationship with Peter. And he wants us to do the same thing. Now, I want you to notice what he didn't say, because he could have said, he could have been like a lot of people we've known. I've known people like this. He could have sat down with Peter, and here's what he could have said. "Peter, you blew it." Looking at him across from that fire, "Peter, I got you here because I really want to dress you down. I want to tell you what you did wrong. First, you don't have enough faith to walk on the water. I call you out on the water and you sink. You tried to talk me out of going to the cross and I had to rebuke you like the devil. You wouldn't let me wash your feet and I had to rebuke you for that too. Instead of praying with me in the garden, Peter, when I asked you to, you fell asleep. And on top of that, you embarrassed me in the garden when you got to pull out your sword and cut off that guy's ear. And I had to pick his ear up and paste it back on and heal him. You ran away from me in my darkest hour, and now you've denied me. Peter, in all honesty, ever since I've known you, you've been cowardly, conceited, rash, slow, presumptuous, impulsive, and I've had enough. But he didn't do that, because our Lord Jesus doesn't do that. You know why? Because he saw incredible potential in Simon Peter. This was the one who would stand up on the day of Pentecost and preach a 3-minute message that brought 3,000 people to Christ, 1,000 per minute. This was the one who would one day walk down the street and his shadow would heal people. This was the one that gave us 1 Peter and 2 Peter. This was the one who finally said, "Don't crucify me right side up. Crucify me upside down. I'm not worthy to be crucified like my Lord was." The potential that was in him, Jesus saw it. And so guess what? Jesus' message to Simon is the same as it is to us. Your failure is not fatal or final unless you quit. And I'm not going to give up on you. Don't give up on yourself. Jesus restored him. He gave up his right to retaliate against Peter, and instead he dealt with the offense. And he got the offense restored immediately. So first, we learn from Jesus to deal with offenses quickly. Is there an offense today that you could leave church and go and deal with, and deal with it quickly? With a spouse, with a child, with a parent, with an in-law, with an outlaw, with a brother, with a sister. Second, I see this in what Jesus did with Peter. He made a conscious decision to forgive. Do you know that forgiveness is not a feeling? If you're waiting for the feeling to forgive, you will never forgive, because the feeling isn't going to get you. You don't want to forgive them. You're not going to feel a warm fuzzy to forgive somebody that hurt you, that made you angry, that betrayed you. That's not what you're feeling. You're feeling like you want to whoop them or take vengeance on them. People often say, "You know what? I don't want to forgive. I don't feel like forgiving." But we need to realize that forgiveness doesn't begin with a feeling. It begins with a conscious decision. Now you say, "Well, then how do I forgive?" Let me show you what James said. James said, "I want you to imagine a ship. The ship is out at sea, and the ship has sails. And here's that ship, and all of a sudden there is a storm, and huge winds start blowing against those sails." James said, guess what? The wind of the storm doesn't decide or determine the direction the ship goes. You look under the water, you look at a little rudder, and the captain turns a steering wheel up there where the captain sits, and when he turns that wheel, that rudder turns, and it's the rudder that turns the direction that ship goes, not the wind blowing the sail. James said, your rudder is your tongue. So when the storms of offense blow against your life and somebody hurts you, wounds you, makes you cry, makes you angry, betrays you, stabs you in the back, does you wrong, does you dirty, and that wind is blowing against the sail, and that wind is saying, go ahead and crash against the rocks of bitterness. Hold that grudge. Don't forgive them. They don't deserve it. You need to take a stand and punish them. You say, that's not what Jesus said. Jesus said, forgive one another even as I have forgiven you. And so I don't feel like it, but I'm going to say it. I forgive. I forgive them. I release them. I forgive them. And as you do that, that's the rudder, and that's going to decide the direction your life goes. And instead of going against the rocks of bitterness, you will go out to the sea of God's peace and calm and blessing. Folks, we are not dependent on circumstances. Circumstances are dependent on what we say. So you say, I forgive. There have been times I forgave people many, many times in one day. Jesus said, how many times do you forgive in a day? 490 times if you have to. But do it. Say it. You're not the victim of the storm. You are in charge through your tongue. Like it or not, sometimes we're commanded by the Father to do something even if we don't really feel like it. Make the decision to forgive. Not because they deserve it. They may not. They may be terrible people. But listen, it's not how bad they are. It's how much do you want to be free? Because if they're that bad, then the last thing you want is for them to be controlling your life through a grudge and through bitterness. Don't allow anybody to control your life by holding a grudge. See, we think by taking a poison pill, we're going to kill them. But when you take the poison pill, you kill you. When you don't forgive and you hold the grudge, you're killing you, and they go on with life.
Thanks for listening today to Hardwired with Pastor Jeff Wickwire. To get a copy of today's message, give us a call at 877-884-3111. Or you can pick it up at our website, hardwired.org. That's 877-884-3111 or the website, hardwired.org. While you're there at the website, you'll find today's message along with all the messages from Pastor Jeff. We know they've been an encouragement to you, so be sure to forward them on to a friend who you think needs to hear today's message or any of the messages there at the website. It might be the very thing they need to be encouraged as well. Again, the website is hardwired.org or call us at 877-884-3111. If you haven't been to the website lately, jump on over there and take a look at all we have for you. One last thing, your partnership with this program through your generous giving is always needed and very appreciated. We know Hardwired is making a difference in your life, so this is how you can make a difference to ours. Please take a minute to send your best gift through our website, hardwired.org, or by calling 877-884-3111. Thanks so much for your heart of generosity. We truly do appreciate it. Be sure to join us next time right here on Hardwired.